News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is just about 7 minutes after 8 o'clock on Mobile Mornings on your Tuesday, which happens to be the 2nd of July, inching our way closer to the national holiday on July 4th.
That's right. And heard from Leanna that traffic is already bad as she was coming into work. So hopefully, if you're heading out anywhere, it clears up for you whenever you decide to leave for the beach or wherever you're headed for the 4th, but hopefully everyone has a safe Independence Day later this week. It is a Tuesday. That means it's time to talk with our Tuesday guest. That would be Quinn Hillier. You can read his work at quinnhillier.com and also the Washington Examiner. And a banner term for the U.S. Supreme Court ended with a very, very busy week, even had to tack on an extra day. And the final ruling we get from them is one that maybe the most waited on decision, and that came yesterday in Trump v. USA and presidential immunity, Quinn.
Yes, and I think conservatives are very badly mistaken if they celebrate this decision. And let me explain why, both practically and according to the Constitution. Practically, if you reverse things, if Hillary Clinton had squeaked by to beat Trump in 2016, and then Trump had squeaked by to beat Hillary in 2020, and Hillary had done to Trump, had done a lot of the things Trump did, and then was being tried and asked for immunity, almost every conservative in the country, 99.9%, would have been saying absolutely no way should this level of immunity be granted. It wouldn't be close. Conservatives would be yelling from the rooftops that even to suggest that level of immunity for a former president would be abominable. And yet, because it's Trump, because it's a Republican, suddenly we want the immunity that we would not want if it were Clinton. Think about that. This is setting a precedent for, you know, basically forever. And certainly for until there's a court that will overturn it, and that can only happen if it's given the right circumstances to overturn it. So practically speaking, we should be worried if that which is done for supposedly us is not something we would want if the shoe were on the other foot.
Well,
that's practically speaking. Right. And I'll stop there.
Well, and let's, you know, the Hillary Clinton thing, I would say, you know, she continues to this day to say that the 2016 election was fishy. And don't forget the report that she cooked up that claimed massive amounts of Russia collusion with Trump. But it led to, you know, years and years of impeachment trials and speculation that was completely unfounded. So I would say in a different way, she did go about trying to end the Trump presidency.
But I'm talking about giving immunity to her if she had actually won in 2020 and won in 2016 and then lost in 2020, but had done all sorts of things that were questionable and had been tried, et cetera, et cetera. And she claimed immunity for a whole lot of really questionable actions. There's no way any conservative, including a judicial conservative, would say yes. That's just the conservatives here are looking too much at who is immediately affected rather than the long term. But apart from that, it's really weird. Conservative judges all the time say, you've got to look at the text and the history, the text of the Constitution, the text of the statutes, and the history surrounding it. What was the original public meaning? You read those decisions yesterday, and it's the conservatives who are taking, like, court cases that themselves vastly extrapolated from the text, and then they're pushing them further and extrapolating further and then further. So what they're doing is they're saying, well, logically you can extend this, and then logically you can extend that, and pretty soon you're getting into emanations from penumbras, which is what hurt us in abortion cases 50 years ago. And you read the dissent, and the dissent is from the liberals is citing text, is citing history, is citing near-constitutional text, which is the Federalist Papers, and they're basing it in the law and the Constitution actually says, what it was actually understood to mean at the beginning, and what the history shows. So why is it that suddenly conservatives are abandoning what we've said all along before, which is text, history, and context?
And Quinn, you know, this is certainly your lane. You've been studying this thing the Constitution, American history for a long time. But just from what I've, you know, from what I read and then watching some other commentators, including, you know, former Attorney General Bill Barr, who is no fan of Donald Trump, that with this being viewed through such short-term and partisan lens, that liberals and people that don't like Trump are acting like Roberts' decision granted full immunity for every single thing, when to me it looks like he kind of parsed it into three separate categories: official acts, and then acts on the kind of periphery of what the official presidential job would be, and then non-official acts. And
right.
He passed it down to the lower court to have them kind of decide piece by piece what constitutes an official act or an unofficial act. And also looking at from the other side, you have Biden, and whether you believe it or not, I fully believe that he is sicking his dogs and have on Trump since he came into office, and that this Roberts decision protects presidents, present, past, and future, to allow them to do what they need to do without worry about political retribution once the next president comes into office, whether that president's a Republican or a Democrat. That's the way that Roberts' decision read to me.
Well, okay, let me take the first two points. On the on trifurcating things into three different groups, first of all, not even the Trump people said that unofficial acts should be immune. So that's actually not much of... I mean, that's not even at play, and yet the court, John Roberts, acted as if that's a big
deal.
Put
it in play.
Given that up. Okay. Secondly, he says absolute immunity for every core responsibility. Now, that's hugely sweeping language, and he included in core responsibilities any discussions with the Justice Department. Now, if you take that literally, if the president calls the Justice Department and says, I want you to arrest and set up a mock trial and execute pro-lifers, he could be impeached and removed from office if it were found out. He could not be tried criminally. Now, that's pretty scary. Okay, it's the sweeping nature of the absolute immunity and the number of things that were identified as core responsibilities, that if you give it to a future president, Kamala Harris, every conservative in the country is going to say, oh my God, what have we gotten ourselves into, because she is going to weaponize this like we've never seen. Okay, and then the middle category turns out not to be much of a middle at all. Because it says it is the president is presumptively immune for every official act within the outer limits of his power, not reasonable limits, within the absolute outer limits, he is presumptively immune. And to show that he's not immune, the prosecution has to show that there is no damage done even conceivably to official duties. So that means that anything that he can claim is part of his powers, if it is at all affected by any consideration, then you can't be prosecuted criminally for. You know what that would have meant? That would have meant Gerald Ford would not have needed to pardon Richard Nixon because Nixon would have already been scot-free. I could think of example after example where this just in practice, in history, and in reading the Constitution, it makes no sense.
But would Nixon have still been the president? No.
No. Nixon could have been impeached and removed, but Nixon. In fact, I'm reading a book right now by Nixon's and Reagan's speechwriters. My friend Ken Kachigan, talking about this exact thing. When Nixon got out, the first month, you know, there was a lot of public discussion. You know that okay, Nixon was going to have to prepare to defend himself criminally because it was just assumed. Based on every cogent reading of the Constitution, that he was still criminally liable. Well, according to this ruling, he would not be criminally liable. And so you've got to look, A, what does the Constitution say? B, what does the text say? And C, what does this mean if you take Trump out of it, if you take Clinton out of it, if you don't know who you're talking about, what precedent are you setting? And right now the precedent would be setting an unbelievable amount of uncontrolled power for a president without any criminal retribution.
Let's look at this quickly politically before we get to the break, and we'll get to the debate after the break, Quinn. But real quickly, politically, this sets up for the Democrats, much as they used Roe v. Wade and the emotion of that, to better outcomes than a lot of people predicted back in the midterms. This sets up for Democrats to go right along with their narrative that Trump is the ultimate boogeyman, somebody you should be scared to elect into office. That's their narrative, and this plays into it, correct?
Of course it plays into it, and you know what this did? It not completely, but it largely takes the fear of a totally decrepit, demented Biden off of the front pages and puts the fear back on Donald Trump.
Right.
Whereas, so this is not a good thing for Republicans who want to beat Joe Biden, because exactly what you said, this plays right in the Democrats' political hands. It's a bad decision on substance. It's a bad decision on practical precedent, and it's a bad decision short term for the politics of it.
And I think it's a great decision for Republicans who don't want to see their presumptive nominee locked up by his political opponents leading
Guess
into
what?
This election. I mean, that is the most immediate thing we're talking about here. And I don't think any president during their term should have to be looking over their shoulders for who's going to be elected next, who might want to try to put them in jail, whether it's drone strikes with Obama or anything else.
Well, then don't do things that leave yourself open to being put in jail. But guess what? This still won't keep Trump out of jail because it has nothing to do with state courts. And the problem is the ridiculous prosecution, mostly ridiculous, from Alvin Bragg could go on regardless, because this only affects federal cases, and that was not a federal case. So Trump could still be in jail after all of this.
Quinn Hillier, QuinnHillier.com, The Washington Examiner. More with Quinn. We'll turn our attention to last Thursday night and get your take on that, Quinn, okay?
Okay.
It's 8:20, Dan and Dalton. Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 on Mobile Mornings on the 2nd of July, Tuesday morning. Quinn Hillier, QuinnHillier.com, and the Washington Examiner. He's been a political columnist and observer for a long time, but I won't even hesitate to say you've never seen anything like what we saw on Thursday night on that debate stage, Quinn.
That was appalling. It was frightening. It was inexcusable. And for the media to pretend that they are so surprised, actually they might be, because they live in such a little bubble and they willingly lie to themselves and each other and willingly ignore absolute proof facts right in front of them in order to push their narrative. But the truth is, and it has been obvious for anybody with half a brain for a long, long time, that Biden is slipping into a form of senility. That doesn't mean that he has Alzheimer's or something like that, but it means that he has moments that are worse than just foggy that make him basically incapacitated, sort of in and out of incapacitation. And if there is a crisis while he's in, you know, one of those interludes, we're in a boatload of trouble.
We are.
It's
and
inexcusable for the Democrats not just to say put up with him for, you know, until January 20th, but to actually expect the country, ask the country to put this man in office for four more years.
Incredible.
It is appalling. It is inexcusable. It is un-American.
And, you know, while we don't have a diagnosis to point to, I think pretty much everyone has someone with dementia or a similar ailment in their family. So a lot of people know exactly what's happening, at least the decline in his mental capabilities. And you're right. I mean, it's surprising, but not really, that so many people have just been behind the curtain, I guess, and had no clue that this is the road we've been headed towards for such a long time. Then the calls immediately after the debate, especially before everyone got their marching orders, were, oh, man, got to get him out. Got to get a different Democrat in there, someone who can actually string thoughts together during a 90-minute debate. Things have kind of toned down on that front after some of the politicians like Obama and Pelosi said, no, he's going to stick the course. But I was thinking this week, with Independence Day coming up, if they were to make a move, you've got the July 4th news dump. It's also a patriotic week. I don't know if we'll see something if Biden decides to step out, if it would be this week or not. But you kind of explored the potential of the Democrats replacing him in an article this week.
Yeah, I did an imaginary phone call between both Obamas, both Clintons, Hakeem Jeffries, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and Ron Klain, who was the chief of staff for Biden for a long time, calling Joe and Jill and laying down the law to them and saying, either you get out and make it look like you're doing it on your own, or we're going to publicly issue a statement saying that you should get out and you'd be dead meat, and, you know, there's no way you would recover politically from that anyway. And then they go to Kamala Harris and they say, look, if you run, you're going to get crushed. There's no way you can win, and you'll be a has-been, and your career will be over. Why don't you instead take a lifetime appointment, which would mean you would not even have to worry about all the messiness of politics. Take a lifetime appointment to the Ninth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals. You can't be removed unless you, you know, go do bribery or something. And you might be set out for the Supreme Court in the future. And guess what? If you don't take this, we're gonna endorse somebody else anyway. That could actually do it, especially if they then replace them with the right ticket, which I also outlined in the piece. You can see it at QuinnHillier.com, or Google it at QuinnHillier and Washington Examiner. That's what they should do. So far, they haven't. Although, I am told this. I have a very good source who tells me that his very good source, so this is second hand or third hand, said that Obama and some others already made a call to Joe urging him to get out, and Joe said no. And that's when Obama and Clinton then said, well, if we can't talk him out of it, we better bolster him so he wins. And that's when they put out their statements. But, you know, be that as it may, either way, they don't have the guts so far to do it publicly. And the threat of doing it publicly is the only thing that's going to get them out.
You know, this is
amazing times we live in.
It reminds me kind of like Biden and Kamala are squatters in a house,
yeah.
Even though, you know, they hold the office, but I don't think either wants to leave. With just a minute over, and I know there's all kinds of candidates that could potentially replace Biden, but let's say Kamala doesn't make her way out and she is the candidate. Does Trump perform better against Kamala or Biden? Or is it about the same?
Slightly better against Kamala, because she is so not just unpopular, but unlikable. And the more people see of her, the less they like her. At least some people like Biden. I don't know of anybody that likes Kamala. You got to remember, she was supposed to be one of the two front runners in 2020, and instead she was the first semi-major person to drop out because her polls had tanked so badly before she even made it into December of 2019, actually.
Yeah, Buttigieg
She's
was
terrible.
Buttigieg was running pretty hot at that time, and then South Carolina happened, and suddenly here's Joe Biden. Quinn, Washington Examiner, QuinnHillier.com, places they can read your stuff, right?
Yes, indeed. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful Independence Day, Quinn, and we'll come back and turn up your voice, 251-343-0106. You can hop on the phone line or the text lines there. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Coming to the text line here in a minute, 251-343-0106. Plus, fans of E.B. Sledge, Eugene Sledge, author of With the Old Breed, Pele Lou in Okinawa. We'll get into a very cool story regarding him and Pele Lou here in just a minute. But this segment brought to you by our good friends over at Tobias and Comer Law, the local personal injury law firm. It's helped get fair compensation for a ton of people in our area, and they've been doing it for decades from their office down on Dauphin Street. I've talked about this so often, but of course, you know, you see billboards all around advertising, and so many of those attorneys aren't really from this area. You know, they have offices you call, and you might not ever even talk with them. At Tobias and Comer Law, they are here. They are local. They shop where we shop, go to church, we go to church, and they represent people around here because they live around here. And they give you that kind of effort as well. And so often I've heard so many stories of people who've gone into their offices or talked with them, and then they even stay friendly with them after the case runs its course. That's just the kind of good people they are at Tobias and Comer Law. And a great conversation yesterday with Lacey Smith from Tobias and Comer as we were talking about bike safety as we head into summer. So many children out there on the roads, and we also have, of course, these e-bikes, which have become so massively popular. I know you're seeing more and more out there. Just some great tips on staying safe and keeping the kids safe, whether you're the ones on the bike or you're in a car and there's bikes around. You can check that out along with a ton of other great information at TobiasComerLaw.com. Plus, you can check out all of our Law 251 podcasts from over the years at that same site or FMTalk1065.com. So that website, TobiasComerLaw.com, you'll also find the phone number there for a free consultation at any time of the day, 251-432-5001. That's TobiasComerLaw.com.
On the text line, a texter commenting about Quinn's source in Washington, D.C., my neighbor's best friend's sister's uncle's dad's dog knows knows somebody very very important in D.C., and they told me through an interpreter that Joe Biden got a phone call from Obama. Okay, they go on with that. But anyway, that's so questioning Quinn's resources in D.C.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm no law student. I thought one time about going to law school, and that was it. The one time I thought about it, that's as far as it went.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm pretty good at, you know, I've been pretty good at arguing with people over the years. But so a lot of this is above me, and I'll be honest with you. You know, a lot of the decisions, you know, there's certain things you have to outsource when it comes to your life. Makes things easier to depend on experts.
You have experts coming to your house today.
Right.
It's hot outside, to say the least, and they're going to make sure that it's not so hot in your house.
Mm-hmm.
You outsource that, and you get the results that you want.
Right.
No shame in that.
Yes.
And we talked about this earlier this week or late last week. You know, yeah, we're here every day. We report the news. We pontificate. We opine and all. But you and I both do a good bit of reading, podcasting, researching to have an idea what's what, because sometimes it's hard to know what's up and what's down. And you read two opinions on something, and they're miles apart, and they seem like both sensible people. So anyway.
And there's also perils of, you know, outsourcing your thoughts.
Yes.
Outsourcing all of the work, because just think of COVID, right? Yeah. We, until 2020, and I know some of you out there, especially who have been on the anti-vax train for a lot longer, said, oh, we should have never trusted a lot of these health officials. But look what happened there, right? We, I think, as a nation, put too much stock in decision makers who know medicine, right? Mm-hmm. That was a major, major problem. So you need to get varied opinions as well from experts. And, but I will never know more about law than John Roberts or Clarence Thomas or really any of the nine Supreme Court justices. And from what I've read and looked through with this, the ruling makes perfect sense. We don't, and just take, you know, the Democrats, and they're going to shift this whole thing to being about the Supreme Court, like you were saying, just like Roe v. Wade.
Just like Roe v. Wade, and then and weaponize it all. They weaponized Roe v. Wade, got out the emotional vote, and did very well in the midterms. Mm-hmm. Nobody saw that coming. Same thing. This is right before the election. Politically, I don't think it's a winner for Republicans. Politically.
Right. But is Trump powerful enough against Biden or whoever the nominee may be that it doesn't matter as much as that midterm did where Trump was not literally right on the ballot?
True.
Right. And
true.
So, but, you know, Tim Scott said it, Senator Tim Scott, and you played that audio earlier. We said this is now about the Supreme Court. Democrats, their messaging will be, look at what this Trump-appointed court has done to our nation. Can you believe it? That they're running us into the ground, even though some of these decisions take away some of the presidential decisions, but just taking power out of the federal bureaucracy and at least taming it is with the Chevron ruling and the EPA ruling and the SEC ruling, just some great stuff coming from this conservative court, and it will be used against them in the upcoming elections. But I like getting opinions for people who are as objective as possible. And while I think Attorney General Bill Barr certainly had an axe to grind towards the end of the Trump term, mm-hmm. I really don't think he's any fan of Donald Trump. And, of course, there's been a war of words between them. It's tamed down here lately, but especially after 2020, things got really heated between them. The Democrats, the liberals, the never-Trumpers after this ruling yesterday are looking at it in such a short-term lens. All they want to see is Trump put in jail,
mm-hmm.
completely ignoring the fact that this ruling would make it impossible for Trump to put Biden in jail for things he did during his presidency if they were official acts. I mean, this is about the future.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. I mean, Biden probably should be thankful in some ways because he himself could get trapped up in all this, mm-hmm. with what he's done in his presidency.
Right.
He could be prosecuted as well.
And so, and there are checks on the presidential power even after this ruling. You still have Congress, and I know it's asking a lot of them to do their job, but they still have, you know, the keys to the kingdom, as it were. They can impeach presidents if what they've done is incredibly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You still have the voters who are the ultimate check on power, or should be. Who decides who is in office, who isn't in office. So all of this fretting yesterday from the left, including from Sotomayor and her dissent, where they keep bringing up the SEAL Team 6 thing and that Trump could have his political opponent shot dead in the middle of, you know, Fifth Ave, if he could have the SEAL Team go out and do that and be completely covered by this immunity. That is not what Roberts ruled at all. It's so far from what he ruled. Here is Bill Barr, former Attorney General, who, like I said, no fan of Donald Trump. Here was his response to the fretting from the left after this decision yesterday.
The dissent by Justice Sotomayor, I think, unfairly portrays the majority opinion. The question is, what's the function being performed? What's the authority being used? Not what instrument is being used. So, for example, the president can direct that a case be dropped, and that's part of his constitutional authority. But he cannot accept a bribe to do that because that's receiving a bribe. He doesn't have authority to receive a bribe. Another example would be he has the right to go and tell the Department of Justice to investigate something. But an example used by Justice Sotomayor was, oh, then he can fabricate evidence, give the evidence to the department and tell them to use that to indict them. He doesn't have authority to fabricate evidence. That's not carrying out an executive function. And the worst example, I think, the one that makes no sense whatsoever, is the idea that he can use SEAL Team 6 to kill a political opponent. The president has the authority to defend the country against foreign enemies, armed conflict, and so forth. He has the authority to direct the justice system against criminals at home. He doesn't have authority to go and assassinate people. So whether he uses the SEAL team or a private hitman, it doesn't matter. It doesn't make it a carrying out of his authority. So all these horror stories really are false.
Maybe so.
Yeah, and so do we want our president, whoever it is, whether it's Donald Trump, you know, Pete Buttigieg, Gavin Newsom, insert candidate here, when they are the president, do we want them looking over their shoulder every second of every day, wondering if so-and-so wins the next election, are they going to bring charges against me? Are they going to try to put me away for doing my job, which is to lead really the United States, but we know the president is leader of the free world. There is so much responsibility in that position that would anything ever get done if they had to worry about criminal prosecution? And this had been decided civilly in that Nixon case in the, I think it was 82, the Supreme Court had that one, that you can't civilly punish a president mm-hmm. after they get out of office. And this kind of just stayed in that same track, just with criminal prosecution. And yeah, you're going to hear a lot more bedwetting. And that's what I think the Pennsylvania Senator Fetterman, he said the liberals were bedwetting because of the Biden debate and they just need to stick the course. You're going to hear a lot more liberal and never Trumper bedwetting leading up to the election. And they're saying, you know, the keys to a dictatorship. We've already seen the lines that have been trotted out there.
Wait till you see the ads. Wait till you see the dramatic ads as we get into this campaign season. It's going to blow your – but shouldn't. But both sides, I mean, do you think the Republicans have got anything to work with from some of the material, quote-unquote, that Joe Biden provided on Thursday night? My God. Mm-hmm. What did we witness? We were shocked.
Yeah.
Saddened, a little mad because that's our president? Really? How long have you been hiding that?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, with Trump, we know the narrative. It's just going to come at us 100 miles an hour with the criminal and with the intent to take down his political opponents, with no mention of him being tracked down like a fox in Atmore.
a rabid fox.
Yeah, these ads but take away the ads and just talk about the rhetoric. We didn't hear on TV this morning, on CBS, on NBC, on ABC, because we're doing our job. Can you imagine what was said this morning on those mainstream?
Mm-hmm.
We have the news right down the middle for you. Yeah, so, you know, that's what many Americans are consuming, and that's why so many Americans have got the Trump disorder.
And I've never watched The View outside of a couple clips that have gone viral online.
Crazy.
I might have to, anyone out there tell me what time The View comes on? I might have to record it or make an appointment viewing today, because that is probably going to be some spectacular entertainment.
It's 11 o'clock, and by 11:08, you'll be throwing up.
You think so? And texter here, Ray said, I saw on Fox 10 where AOC will be filing for impeachment for the Supreme Court. This is nuts, just impeaching everyone when it's not fair. Yeah, I saw that. And that will be the main push. It's now it's not so much Biden v. Trump, although it is. It's Biden v. Trump v. Trump's Supreme Court.
Yep.
And they saw success with that in the midterms, like
yep.
Dan said earlier. I think you could probably expect that same route of attack here. You know what's also entertaining and is the infighting that's going on between potential Democrat candidates, if they don't slide in here during this presidency, for the 2028 election. And the infighting that's going on there, did you see the Gretchen Whitmer leaked text where she reached out to someone with the Biden campaign and basically said, there's no way in hell we're winning Michigan after this. And latest poll shows Trump up 4 points in Michigan. If Biden doesn't get Michigan, he's not getting the Electoral College. And that text she sent was leaked. And the thought is that you've got other players and other allegiances within that Biden camp for who they'd like to see in office in 2028, or if someone replaces Biden early.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be fascinating to watch over the coming years as well, kind of the infighting in the Democrat Party, whether it's Pritzker or Whitmer or Newsom. They're all going to be at each other's necks going forward.
And why did the argument have to involve SEAL team? Why?
It's because I believe it was one of the Supreme Court justices who brought it up in the argument.
It was Sotomayor, I believe. But you could say special forces without naming one team of the special forces. I mean, that's these are heroes.
Yes.
And you dragged them into this argument.
Mm-hmm.
You know what they've done for your life? Justice? Do you know what they've done for all our lives?
Yeah.
Of all the people to indict in a way, soil in a way, because you're making this argument that something could happen to a Trump political political opponent and SEAL Team 6 is going to do the job? I mean, that's disgraceful.
Yeah, and it's obvious they were wanting it. Because those are the most badass dudes on the planet. They're trying to make it the most extreme horror situation possible.
And it's garbage.
You're right. I didn't think enough about that.
You should never invoke them into this. That's just, you know. It's 849 FM Talk 106.5, Dan and Dalton. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Well, on tomorrow's show, we're going to make sure everybody knows exactly what's going on out there for the 4th of July. We'll try to summarize everything and make sure that your municipality is included in our report so you know what to enjoy, when and where.
Yes, we'll give you that full layout tomorrow. Coming up, the Jeff Poor Show. He'll lead it off with Congressman Jerry Carl. Can't wait to hear his response after that Supreme Court ruling yesterday. Also, State Representative Shane Stringer in hour number one, right around 9:30. And at the end of the show, ALGOP Chairman John Wall joins Jeff Poor. Talked about this in the 6 o'clock hour. It's funny how things work out sometimes, you know, where maybe you've never heard a word before or a word that sounds kind of foreign to you, and then you can't stop hearing that word over the next week or two.
Hubris.
Is that the word?
Well, it was my word this like past week or so.
And then you just hear everyone say it.
Everybody's saying it all the time.
I have not been on the hubris boat. I have no idea. Yesterday evening, I turn on The Pacific, one of my favorite shows of all time. I love Band of Brothers. I love The Pacific. I haven't finished it, but I love Masters of Air, the new one that's on Apple TV. And so I'm watching the first episode of The Pacific again. Starring our own E.B. Sledge, Eugene Sledge, who wrote the book With the Old Breed, Peleliu in Okinawa. And so I watched that. Then I go back to do a little bit more prep last night, and I see this on CNN. A U.S. Marine Corps aircraft has landed on a rebuilt runway on a World War II-era Japanese airfield on the Pacific island of Peleliu, as the site of one of the Marines' bloodiest battles of the war. And now, looking to the future, a possible U.S. basing option and a strategy to counter China. And if you haven't seen The Pacific or read Sledge's book, the Battle of Peleliu is a major, major part of it. They said, back to the present, the KC-130 Hercules transport aircraft touched down on the 6,000-foot runway on June 22nd. Marine Corps called it a significant and triumphant return to this iconic World War II site. Marine engineers had been working on rebuilding the runway for months, clearing brush, removing trees, and this is the fun part, ensuring no unexploded ordnance remained from the World War II battle on the island. And if you don't remember how bloody that battle was, more than 1,500 U.S. troops, nearly 11,000 Japanese were killed on Peleliu in 1944 between August and November. And the U.S. Naval History and Heritage Command noted that some of the Japanese troops hid in the island's jungle and weren't found until 2 years after the war ended. Wow. And E.B. Sledge, he's talked about this a lot over the years, went back and watched a clip of this documentary. I can't remember exactly which documentary it was, where he was talking about first arriving at Peleliu and then the aftermath and what it did to his regiment.
Yeah, I looked at the island and all you could see, it just looked like a thin line. It was just a sheet of flame, backed by just this huge black wall of smoke. And I thought, my God, none of us will ever get out of that place. My company landed with, K-35 landed at Peleliu with 235 men, and we had 64% casualties. The division was top-notch, one of the finest in World War II, I say the finest, and it was shot to pieces.
And so in addition to this being a runway we can use in any future tiffs with China, of course, this is the coolest part. The Marines named the rebuilt landing strip the Sledge Runway in honor of Eugene Sledge.
Wow.
That is just the coolest thing you'll see today.
You just kind of came across that, right? You were watching?
Yeah, just turned on the Pacific. I don't know why yesterday I was just in that kind of mood, mm-hmm. or I wanted to watch it, and threw it on, started doing some prep, and all of a sudden, the Battle of Peleliu, that runway, and they're naming it Sledge Runway.
Amazing. And again, you go back to that era of men and women, but those young guys that did all that they did, the most crucial corners of the world at really the most crucial time for way of life surviving mm-hmm. In Europe, across Europe, and also in the Pacific, and true heroes, as I was talking about. You know, you would never invoke them into any kind of conversation that had to do with politics or whatever, because what they did was courageous and sacred.
Yeah.
The work that the SEALs do today.
Amen. Texter here said, ordered with the old breed after E.B. Sledge was on your station last time. Best book I've ever read. Wow. Yeah, Sean's talked with his son John Sledge quite a bit. It is a great book. I recommend you get that book and read it, and also watch The Pacific if you have the heart for it.
Jerry Carl on The Jeff Poore Show on the way next.